Welcome to Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and explore ways to help students and teachers thrive. Thank you for tuning into this episode, Inside the 2026 Session. What's ahead for Sarasota County schools and students? Winter and spring marks the week's long range for the legislative session in Tallahassee, and education is always a top-of-mind item. 3 years ago, Sarasota County Schools created the position of Supervisor of Government Affairs to have someone delegated to engage at that legislative level. Today's guest, Chris Parento, serves in that role, working closely with our legislators as a partner in the process of policymaking. Today, he speaks with Jennifer about the 2026 session, insights and outcomes to date.
Hey, podcast listeners, it's Jennifer Vine. I'm really excited to be here with you guys today as we have a special guest, Chris Parento, who is the Supervisor of Government Affairs for Sarasota County Schools. And as all you guys know, as you listen into our podcast, we love to bring in guests who can provide rich and deep information about where education is going, the challenges that we're faced with today. And certainly Chris Parento is right in the thick of all of that activity. And so, Chris, welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you so much for having me here today, Jennifer.
Yeah. I'm really excited to hear more about you. I know our listeners want to hear more about what's going on, but if you could share some of the key priorities, just to start to level set us, of what Sarasota County Schools went into the session this particular year, which again, as this is recorded, they're still going into an extended session, but what are the key priorities that Sarasota County Schools is really trying to support?
Over the last couple of years, we've had very similar priorities as a school district that the school board approved. And the first of those is a level playing field. The superintendent says over and over again, we embrace competition, we embrace innovation. We just want to be playing not only the same game, but on the same field as all of our competitors. We believe that we deliver the highest quality product, the best education that we can for families in Sarasota County. We just want that equal playing field. This year, as a part of our legislative platform, we talked about funding, but from a different avenue, looking at all of the cost increases over the last few years of those recurring costs that are outside of our control, utilities, costs of construction, salaries, benefits, FRS contributions. So looking at it from that perspective of how we've seen increases in funding over the last few years, but where that gap comes in when the funding increases, but some of the expenditures are increasing at a higher pace. And then we did, again, advocate for some changes to the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program with a little bit of extra oversight. And over the last couple of years, the approach that we've taken was having that be a separate district within the FEFP, not a separate categorical item. We know that there is some hesitation with that in the legislature, but similar to how Florida Virtual is within the FEFP as a separate district.
That's a really great grounding. And for our listeners, can you explain first, before I go into some unpacking of your response, what is the categorical funding? Because a lot of times people don't understand kind of how the funding system really works for education.
So within the Florida Education Finance Program, the FEFP, you have the base student allocation that all districts get. And then you have different funds that come along with that. Student transportation is a categorical funding item. Safety and security, the mental health assistance allocation, those are separate categorical items that are separate buckets of money. And then they're distributed to districts based on their enrollment. And there has been discussion in the legislature and across the state about having the FES program be a separate categorical item like that. Again, there is some hesitation to that. We saw it last year with the advanced programs funding that was moved outside of add-on FTE for students and into a separate categorical item. And one of the issues that we've seen with that this year is that when you do have a categorical fund, there's a set amount of dollars that are within that. So as more students have been earning the scores that would have given additional add-on FTE, now instead of that additional money coming in, it just gives a lower portion of what that add-on FTE would have been because it is a separate categorical item and it's quote unquote capped if you will.
Got it. That's really helpful. So you really were going with a two-pronged approach is what I hear you saying in terms of looking at the funding model, both from capital expenses, utility costs, and things of that sort. And then the second avenue is looking at the empowerment scholarships. So touching on maybe the first one, is there any type of alliance among other school districts that are also trying to amplify the voice and the position where you all are coming from?
Absolutely. And we know that we're in a unique position in Sarasota County, right? We are a coastal county. We know that we have to build our facilities to a higher wind load than you would if you live in the center of the state. And so that gives us an additional cost as a school district when we're building. So we look at some of those other coastal counties on not only the West Coast, but the East Coast of Florida, who are facing similar challenges and trying to present those in a unified way where it really breaks down what the cost per square foot is when we're building a new facility. And then when somebody maybe that's not a coastal county is building the same size school that right. we may be building, but at a much lower cost per square foot.
Well, I think also something that was really helpful, this goes back probably a couple sessions ago, it was seasons on our podcast when we had hurricanes, because what many of the listeners may not have even realized, and for those tuning in today, that the public schools are also built for hurricane standards because they often serve as the hurricane shelters, which is also a dual responsibility that schools have that is a little different than or atypical than the other private schools that may not have that same responsibility.
It is. And this is finishing up the first school year of Sky Ranch. When that school was designed and in the design and planning phases, it was designed to be a hurricane evacuation center. And so with our partnership with Sarasota County, as they run the evacuation centers, we provide the facilities, we assist with some staffing. We knew that we had to build that facility to the standards to be a hurricane evacuation center. And again, being a coastal county, having those higher wind loads that we have to build to, that does add additional costs.
It sure does. And so how was the legislature responding to, especially on the second front? I don't know if you had inroads on the first piece with these capital costs, but certainly with the empowerment scholarships, how did it land? Where is it sitting? And are you guys satisfied yet?
I think to the first part of it, it was more eye-opening. And informing legislators about that. If they don't know, there's nothing they can do.
Right.
So we wanted to make sure we knew it was not going to be a one-year process to get that fixed or to have some sort of equalizer within there for coastal counties. But I think it was eye-opening for them to see what that cost per square foot that we build at versus the cost per square foot for other districts. And then when we talk about the scholarship program, really the main reason that we think that it should be as a separate district is we know that when it is a separate district, that would mean that every student would get a unique Florida identification number.
Right.
And so when you have that and you move from one setting to another, it's very easily trackable. It's linear, right?
Right.
For years, students have moved from one district to another and the money follows the student because that unique identification number is trackable. If it was that same way with FES as a separate district, our district feels like that would be more easily trackable and the money could more clearly follow the student.
So this is something you're going to stay on and continue to advocate for in the continuing sessions with other legislators.
So as we move forward now, we know that we still have the budget negotiations yep. coming up as of right now when
right.
we're recording this, but we will again reevaluate as we do after every session. And as we start to build our legislative platform for the 2027 legislative session, we know we have a little bit more time because it's later next year. It starts in March.
Right.
But that will be another item that is brought up for consideration to include on our
okay.
platform.
I think that's wonderful. And so often, and we hear oftentimes in even school board comments, the public comments, the overriding narrative seems to be where the inequitable distribution of the funds right now are going. So we hear a lot about how the funds are leaving the school district and then wanting to see them come back. Is there any counterbalance approach or anything that you all are taking in terms of trying to have more flexibility in terms of the funding such that the private schools, they're not held to the same standard right now. And so is there any counter piece on that that you all are looking at?
I think that from a district perspective, we don't necessarily disagree with the accountability and the transparency that we need to have. We are very open. And as we've been going through some changes over the last couple of months that the superintendent has discussed in board meetings and in workshops, we've been very transparent with the financial outlook of the district and what needs to be done for sustainability moving forward. We believe that that is a great thing. Our job is to be financially responsible to the taxpayer resources that we receive. And we want to make sure that we are as open as we can be about that. We would love it if every other education provider had to be the same level of transparency that we do. That's not currently what the law is and how the law is written, but that's something that is outside of our control.
Right. Good answer. So where do you see the biggest tension right now between state priorities and then the local district needs?
Well, I think that the biggest thing as we look at the budget is the three-year outlook at the state level, right? They're calling for a deficit within 3 years. And so how does that get matched within where we've been, where we are, and where we're going? We know that over the last few years, the state budget was a little bit inflated. We had some federal relief dollars that were in there. That's not the case right now. Property values were rising at levels we had never seen before just 3, 4, 5 years ago. Now they've somewhat leveled off. They're still growing and people are still moving to Florida. But as we look at that, that's the big key. And we know that in Sarasota County, we have one of the lowest birth rates in the state of Florida. We have one of the highest median ages in the state of Florida. We know the cost of living and what it is to live here in Sarasota County. So all of those factors together really impact what the next 3 to 5 years for the school district look like. And that's why we have to plan ahead to make sure that we're not falling back into a financial situation where we don't want to be. We want this to be as sustainable as it can for the next 15, 20 years.
So you're suggesting that there's basically a fiscal cliff in about 3 years. And so does the state see it that way as well? And are they even considering something like, we have a very healthy reserves. Is any of that ever gone into the conversation?
I think that's part of why they've built the reserves to where they have, is because they look at the out years in the budget forecast and they see what that looks like.
That's good. And as the governor reviews the budget, what are the top 1 to 2 items that you're watching most closely and why would they matter locally?
I think that the big one is we now know at least where the allocations are going to be for the education silo. Once again, this year, it's the second highest in terms of total dollar amount. The agreed to allocation amount was $16.2 billion. Last year, it was $16 billion. So it's really going to be what that breakdown looks like through the negotiation process of where that money goes.
And what would be your highest priority? Not you, Chris Parento, but you, Sarasota County Schools, representing. What would you want to see preserved, protected, or changed?
I think that if we can get the budget to a place where the money is trackable, right? That's the biggest thing. If students are in our classrooms, we want to make sure that that FTE dollar amount comes to the school district. We know that over the last few years, we've had some students that have left us and then come back.
Right.
We just want to make sure that that money is trackable and it goes where it belongs. Just like if a student leaves us and goes to another education setting, that provider should be the one receiving the funding.
Put that in context for our listeners, because we've heard those stories anecdotally of students leaving and then returning. But what's the lag time, the average lag time that the funding actually then returns back to the school district?
It all depends on when the student may leave or return relative to the Department of Education's survey windows throughout the year, where they track how many students are in each setting at the time. I will say, this year, the Florida Department of Education has brought out a new cross-check process that we receive files of students that have received family empowerment scholarships and cross-reference those versus the students that are in our classrooms. Hopefully, that allows a quicker resolving of any discrepancies in there and where that student actually is.
That would be a super improvement. And so that was implemented this year?
Yes.
Okay. it makes me curiously wonder of the infrastructure, even at the DOE, with the systems and things like that, it would seem like there must be an investment. So was that an investment to provide that service and support?
There have been conversations about what types of technological infrastructure there can be put in place to track this, whether it's more frequently or more thoroughly. Those haven't landed yet, but this was more of a process and procedural change for how districts are able to cross-check where those students are.
Well, it's a good start. I think the interesting thing is that the process always seemed to go slower than the innovation of the ideas of expanding things like the Empowerment Scholarship. So you want to see the systems kind of keep pace with all that. So staying on maybe the whole funding piece for a little bit more, what do you think is the most misunderstood aspect that listeners have or that the common layperson has about school funding in Florida?
Maybe not the biggest misconception, but the most important piece of this is that school districts, we are funded by the number of students that we have in our classrooms, right? So it's fluid year to year. We know, again, as I go back to the birth rates, we know that 18 years ago, birth rates were a lot higher than they are now. Our outgoing senior class is a lot larger than our incoming kindergarten class is projected to be next school year. So automatically, if that incoming kindergarten class is lower than the outgoing senior class, we know that we may be down, quote unquote, a number of students before anybody makes any decision to go to another educational setting or to come back to us. So we could be starting below zero in terms of what that net year-to-year student enrollment looks like.
I'm thinking of the FEFP, as you mentioned, the Florida, the funding formula, which has been in, I think, the same formula since the early 70s, which probably needs an overhaul. And I think there's been, legislature has been lightly touching on that. Are you seeing any inroads of a real kind of reevaluation of that funding formula?
I think there needs to be. It's a formula that was created when truly there, you went to your neighborhood public school and that was it. There may have been a handful of private schools here and there, but by and large, everybody went to their traditional zoned public school. We now know that that's not the educational environment that we're living in and operating in. I don't know that there's an easy fix to completely overhaul it into a brand new funding formula. That's something that will have to be a priority of the legislature if it's going to happen, and it will take time.
Yeah, for sure. And because it seems like even when you go back to like the declining enrollment, generationally, there's been lower birth rates before. How has that been handled? And maybe it's because the funding formula once was more effective than it is now. But just thinking about from baby boomers to Gen X, that was a real contraction of population. How did they ride the wave at that point?
That was before my time with the school district, obviously. But, you know, it's something that really you have to look closely at where every dollar you're spending is going. And you have to make sure that it matches with what you're receiving and what you're spending.
Gosh. And so what is a conversation that you think the legislature should be having that maybe they're not yet?
That's a great question. I think that a conversation that they may not be having, at least publicly, would be really, what more can we do to level the playing field, right? And I know I've used that line before, but how can we make sure that what's being done at the legislative level is providing the best outcomes for students? We know that with progress monitoring now, we're able to catch things earlier when students are falling behind. That is a great thing. That has changed outcomes for students, not just at the end of the year. You're able to get involved, provide supports, provide interventions earlier than we've ever been because of progress monitoring. Things like that change the game for students and their futures. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be looking at as how we can not just keep them where they are, but keep improving them year over year to make sure that everybody who's educating children is able to do it in the best way possible.
Yeah, and taking those winning strategies, the things that are working well and scaling them seems to be like something that would be really a good formula for success. So in general, how do you balance advocating for district priorities with staying aligned with state leadership?
I think that we do a very good job, right? I'm up in Tallahassee or I'm here at home and having conversations with legislators. We see things all the time. We see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bills filed every year. And usually a few hundred of those are relating to education. I read every one of them. I look at it and I say, okay, if this moves forward, how might it impact our district? How might it impact our students? How might it impact our staff? And then we see things as they start to move. And that's when the discussions really pick up with the larger district leadership team on what would these impacts be to us as a district? And what suggestions do we have to improve this? We can look at it and try to see what the intent is, but what alternative could there be that maybe makes it better for students or better for staff and bring solutions, right? Anytime I'm having a conversation with a legislator, I don't want to bring a complaint because a complaint without a solution is just that. And it usually doesn't get you very far. But when you can bring solutions that help achieve the same intent a different way, that's when things can change.
I agree with you. And so when you think about in the state of Florida, there's 67 counties, so 67 school districts, plus those special ones that we've referenced, like the Florida Virtual School. Do all districts have government affairs supervisors like you?
No, not all school districts do. There are many, many that do, especially those that are similar size to us and those that are larger districts than us. There are a lot of them out there, and they do a great job of advocating for their priorities for their district. We know that there are some similarities between what impacts one impacts all 67, but we also know that each district is unique. And what we try to do is take a leading voice in that. Be at the forefront of advocating for what we need. Hopefully, through that advocacy, it ends up being beneficial for all 66 other school districts. But my role and what the superintendent has tasked me with doing is being the strongest advocate for our school district and our students as I can be. And I take that very seriously. And I know that we have made great progress, both with our local delegation, who we have worked incredibly well with in partnership, but also other members of the legislature across the state.
Gosh, that's really terrific. And I think it's been a real asset having you on the team for Sarasota County Schools. We've seen the difference for sure. And I think you're doing an outstanding job. So just kudos to you on that. Part of your role is also to be looking forecasting. And forecasting, you talked about 3 years. What are you forecasting, 5 years, 10 years? And if you were to paint a picture of what public education looks like in 5 to 10 years in Sarasota County Schools, how would you describe it?
It's hard to speculate that far out, right? We know, looking back 5 years, how much things have evolved.
Yeah.
And if you go back 10 years from that, I don't think anybody would have thought that we'd be where we are today. We know that families have every opportunity available to them to find the place that best fits their child's
right.
education needs. And I think that looking out 5 years, we know that will still be there and that parents will still have the ability to find the opportunity that suits them best. That's why our district has been aggressive and trying to find ways to innovate, right? Public education now isn't what it was in the 90s. If we're not providing a product that our families want, then they're going to find somebody that will. That's why we have innovative new programming that's coming. We have different things with some K-8s that are going to be opening up over the next few years, building from K-5s to K-6, then 7 and 8, because that's what families have said they want. We surveyed all of our families and asked them. And part of the reason that students leave is that fear of middle school, right? You're going from fifth grade and families still think of their fifth grader as a baby,
yes.
right? And then they go to middle school and middle school can appear big and scary and there's a much larger number of students there. And so being able to provide that K-6, 7, 8, not only are you at the same school, but you see the same staff. When you come back in sixth grade, you're not meeting all new staff who you've never seen before. You know who some of those teachers are. You have that comfort. You have that relationship. And we're very optimistic that that's going to keep families with us longer.
Yeah, I think that's a really terrific and bold idea moving. I think there's four of them, right? That you're moving to the K-8 model, which I think that's just terrific. So is there anything that we haven't talked about yet that you think our listeners would be curious to know more about?
No, I think this has been a great conversation. I think it's very important that we stay on top of where things are and what those conversations are that are happening at the state level. We know that the children that are in our schools right now are the future of our county.
Right.
We know they're the future homeowners, they're the future leaders, they're the future business owners. And we know that we have to be at the front and provide the best educational product that we can so that they are set up for success moving forward. And it does take working with our local legislators and working with state legislators in the Department of Education to make sure that we are holding ourselves to the highest standard.
That's super. Well, Chris, this has been so informative. Thank you for being a part of Education Conversations today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
This has been great. And listeners, I'll tell you what, this is not a one-man band. Chris is doing an outstanding job. But I remember when we had Representative Fiona McFarlane on, and she spoke very strongly about the influence that our community had on her as they too were also advocating in support of Sarasota County Schools. So I would encourage all of you to make sure you know your local legislators and that you're staying attuned and getting in touch with them and helping to champion this cause, which is really important. So if you ever want to know more about what's happening with Sarasota County Schools, you can certainly check them out at their website, sarasotacountyschools.net. You always can check us out at our site, which is edfoundationsrq.org. Again, Chris, thank you so much. This was really great. I like talking with you. So hope you will be on us again. But listeners, thank you for being a part of Education Conversations. And this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.